Not a quick answer. All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So tonight is the first in the two-part series that we're going to have on the Haggadah. This is one important scheduling announcement that I'll make it now and also at the end of the shiur, which is next week. The second part of the shiur will not occur on Wednesday night, but instead will occur this coming Monday night. So you can see again, all the information is on the cover page. The reason for that is because actually next Wednesday night, there is a shiur, a community shiur sponsored by the Star K, about Hilchos Pesach that will occur here Wednesday night at 8:15. So in order not to conflict with that shiur, again, the second part of that other shiur will occur Monday night. Okay, yes. It'll be online if you can't make it, absolutely. Okay, so what I'd like to do is every year I try to do a couple of shiurim prior to Pesach as a preparation for Pesach and for the Haggadah specifically, and I always struggle a little bit in terms of what to focus on, where to start, what to do. You know, the Haggadah is familiar territory. So to be able to find new things on the Haggadah each and every year is not always the easiest thing. But I figured this year, instead of going ahead and trying to start in the middle or in the end, we're just going to start from the beginning. And what I want to focus you on this week is what I think one of the most intriguing parts of the Haggadah, even though it appears to be astonishingly ordinary. Take a look at number one. We recite again, just to orient ourselves a little bit, we begin with Kaddish, Kiddush, Urchatz, wash our hands, Karpas, the taking of the vegetable and salt water, Yachatz, the breaking of the middle matzah, and then that brings us to Maggid. The Maggid section. The Maggid section is the primary part of the Haggadah experience, where we go ahead and retell the Exodus narrative. Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. So again, Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, Avadim Hayinu, all the sections we're familiar with. But interestingly enough, there's a section at the beginning of Maggid that seems to be profoundly out of place. Just before we go on, our shiur tonight is sponsored by Karen and Akiva Noach Andrews for the Refuah Shlema for Tzipora Bas Brina Ros, and we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, she will have a complete and enduring refuah. So take a look at number one. Halach ma'anya. This is the bread of affliction. Diachalu avasana ba'arad Mitzrayim. There are forefathers ate in Egypt. Kol dich v'nyeseh v'yechol. All who are hungry, let them come and eat. Kol ditzrich yeseh v'yifsach. All who are in need, let them come and join us. The translation of here is join us for the Pesach Seder. Yifsach literally means join us for the Karban Pesach. Hashata hacha, this year we are here. The Shana Hababa Ardi Yisrael, next year will be in Eretz Yisrael. Hashata Avdi, this year we are in servitude. The Shana Haba'a B'nei Chorin. But in the future, next year, we hope to Emir Hashem be a free people. So there are two immediate questions that come to mind when we look at this section. Number one, what's different about this section than the rest of the Haggadah? Is the language. Right? This section is written in Aramaic, whereas the rest of the Haggadah is written in Hebrew. Number two, which is perhaps the most fundamental question, which is the essence of Halach Ma'anya, really seems to be an invitation. We ultimately seem to be extending an invitation to those who may not have a place for the Pesach Seder. And of course, what's strange about this invitation is the Seder is already underway. Remember, we've already drunk the first of the four cups. We've already initiated the Seder. And again, remember, who am I speaking to? I'm speaking to the people at my table. The hope is that anyone who's already at my table has hopefully already been invited. Okay, so again, who exactly is it? So number one is the timing of the invitation. It's so strange that I'd be issuing an invitation when the Seder has already begun. And number two, so strange to issue an invitation to the individuals who are already a part of my Seder experience. Again, remember, fast forward a little bit towards the end of the Haggadah, We have a part of the city where we open the door, where we go outside, right by the Koshel Eliyahu. So again, if this was a true and genuine invitation, why not go ahead and actually go to the door and invite? Maybe there are still those roaming the street who do not yet have a place for the Seder. Issue a meaningful and sincere invitation by going out to the general public. So two simple questions. Number one, why the Aramaic? Number two, what is really happening in this section? Because it's clearly not a true and genuine invitation. So I want to share with you a number of different approaches to understanding Halach Ma'anya. And again, as we often say, they're not mutually exclusive. They all work beautifully in concert together. But again, each of them really represent a different idea. And what I think we're going to see is by understanding an insight into Halach Ma'anya, we'll not just emerge with an understanding of one paragraph from the Haggadah, but instead we're going to emerge with an approach and an understanding of the Seder experience. Take a look at approach number one, which is source number two. So this is from the Haggadah Shel Pesach Minchas Asher. So the Minchas Asher is Rav Asher Weiss, who actually was in Baltimore just a couple of weeks ago. Rav Asher Weiss is one of the Gedolei HaRabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, great posek, great dayon. See, he wrote a commentary on the Haggadah, and in it he writes the following. V'hine, Iker bazed de be'emes piska zu lo haisa chelek minusach Haggadah klas. Rav Weiss understands, as many commentaries do, that Halach Ma'anya was not part of the original Haggadah. It was not part, again, there's a whole interesting discussion in terms of when the Haggadah itself was actually created. Not our topic for tonight. But one thing is clear, says Rabbi Weiss, which is Halach Ma'anya was not part of the original format of the Haggadah. Dema tam yishlomar kol dichtin yesev yochol balayla kishakol b'nei abayis misub misavav v'shulchan v'nifkad makovam shala ani v'aroif uma tam yishlomar kol ditrich yesev yisach balayla kishavashach tu esa pesach ve'inu ne'achol elu l'menuyam. So Weiss asks our question. He says, why is it that you'd be inviting the poor when hopefully the poor have already been placed for the Seder meal? Not only that, but he writes over here that phrase, whoever is in need, let him come join. Remember, the translation over here is misleading, because the translation over here says, let him join our Pesach Seder. But as he said before, Yifsach means what? Let us join what? The Karban Pesach, the Paschal Lamb. What's the problem with that, says Rabbi Weiss? The halacha by Karban Pesach was, you had to be part of a chabura. You had to be part of a group at the time that the lamb was slaughtered. So meaning by midday on Erev Pesach, you already knew where you were going to go ahead and have your Seder night meal, have your Pesach meal. You had to be part. There was no such thing as last minute company on the night of the Seder. There was no such thing as inviting last minute people to join you in your Korban Pesach. Whoever was part of your group at the time that the lamb was slaughtered, that's part of the chabura. If you were not counted as part of the chabura at the time the lamb was slaughtered, you could not partake of Karan Pesach. So ask Rabbi Weiss, what is happening over here? And he says something amazing. Ela barur shebi'imei kedem hayu machrizim hachraza zu ba'odayom gadol. Rabbi Weiss suggests that halach ma'anya, where does the text come from? This is the text, this is the verbiage that people used to use on Erev Pesach as they would walk through the marketplaces. Odeyom Gadol, while it was still early in the day, kol od lo nishchat ha-Pesach, v'chol od ha-aniyim adayim sovivim b'chutzos ir, levakish melachlam, u'mishum kach hayu omrim dvarim elu ba'aramis. Paragraph C, lashon ha'am. So Weiss makes an amazing observation. He says, where does the verbiage of Halach Ma'anya come from? If you can imagine the scene, on Erev Pesach in the morning, what would happen? So you can imagine, remember, Karban Pesach was eaten for dessert. It's a real dessert, right? Right? Fleisch, right? Yeah. So Karban Pesach was eaten for dessert, which means you had a regular meal, which meant that you needed a good number of people to be part of your group because you're not supposed to leave over anything from the Karban Pesach. So what would happen? What would people do? In the morning of Erev Pesach, so people who had a Paschal lamb but perhaps didn't have enough people to be part of their chabura, people had a little extra meat on their further Karban Pesach, would walk through the marketplace. And what would they do? They would invite the poor to join them. So what would they bless you? They walk through the marketplace and they say, "Kol dichven yesevi echol, whoever is hungry, come join me. Kol ditzrich yesevi yifsach, bless you. Whoever needs a Karban Pesach, come join my Paschal lamb." Why would they say it in Aramaic? Because Aramaic was the vernacular. Aramaic, the common man didn't necessarily understand Hebrew, but the common man understood Aramaic. Says Rabbi Weiss something amazing just from a historical perspective. that this verbiage is the verbiage that our ancestors used during the time of the temple when they would go out into the marketplaces on the morning of Erev Pesach to invite people who did not yet have a place for the Paschal Lamb. They used the vernacular again of the common man, the regular, the accepted language of the common man, and they would issue an invitation. Whoever needs a Karan Pesach, come and join. So why do we say it today? Look at paragraph C. Ulezecher ba'alma nikvu hadvarim ledoros. And says Rabbi Weiss so beautifully, rabbis instituted this recitation as a remembrance, as a memorial for all future generations. B'tchilas ha'agada, shahari b'yesoda piskuzu, einenu chelik metzim ha'agada, u'mizeh tam, misaymin piskuzu hashta ha'cha l'shana ha'ba b'ar v'Yisrael, kevan shechol piska b'bava m'kura, v'no'um os l'zecher. Rabbi Weiss says, so why do we include this? Okay, it's very nice. It was the historical verbiage, just the way they invited people on Erev Pesach. Says Rabbi Weiss, it's Zecher L'Chorban. That the way we begin the Pesach Seder is by remembering that which has been lost. It's the same way, Yishon, there's a general halacha that we are obligated to remember Yerushalayim, the destruction of the temple, Al Rosh Simchasi. When we experience times of joy, when we experience times of elation, times of personal or national happiness, we always have an obligation to remember that which we have lost. Suggest the Minchas Asher. Here on Pesach night, we're going to have a beautiful, uplifting, exuberant experience. What are we obligated to do at the beginning of that experience? We are obligated to remember that which we have lost. How do we remember the Zecher? How do we remember the Korban? How do we remember the destruction of the temple? By using the same verbiage that our ancestors used when the temple stood to invite people to join them for their Paschal Lamb, we use that same verbiage, but not as an invitation. It's not a real invitation. We're using that verbiage to remember that which has been lost. But at the same time, we also say, what? There's an anticipatory desire. This year we're here. This year we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. But Emir Tzashem, next year will be in Yerushalayim. Next year there'll be a temple. Look at number three, Rabbi Cook. Rav Kook continues on this same theme as well. He says, "Halach ma'ani kol dichvin yisei kol nitzach yisei hashata." Look at the second line. "Be'ezras Hashem yisbarach efarish tam hakdama hazol." Rav Kook says, "I'm going to explain to you the need for this introduction, because remember again, it's clearly an introduction because it's in Aramaic and thematically it doesn't fit with the Haggadah." He says, "V'hanira shetiknu al achar achorban." Rav Kook writes that this was introduced into the Haggadah after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. V'lama lo tiknu kodim achorban, nusach malahaskir, shezeh alechem achlu avusinu be'eretz Mitzrayim, v'hayoser pela, ki kodim she'elas manishtana, amar halachma, v'imkein, mamakshe shebechol halelos anu ochlim chameitzu matzo, halo amar mikodim ki kalechem azeh. So Rav Kook just points out here something very interesting. He says that, and this is not our topic for today, but he says, here in halachma anya, we speak about the fact that what? That this matzah is the bread that our ancestors ate in Egypt. Rav Kook says how ironic it is that in Manashtana, what do we ask? We ask, Shebechol ha'leilas anu ochlin chameitzu matzah. Ha'layla hazeh kulo matzah. So Rav Kook says it's strange that we've already answered that question even before we've asked it, right? We ask it in Manashtana, but we've answered halach manya. He brings it as a proof to the fact that halach ma'anya was clearly instituted later. Because again, it wouldn't make sense that it was part of the original part of the Haggadah, because otherwise, why answer the question and then ask it only afterwards? So it was a later introduction. So why is it here? Skip down a little bit. He says, ach, hanira. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 lines down in paragraph A. It would appear, be'ezras Hashem yisparach, yorach levavenu, v'na'atziv nafshenu al godel hanafila asherlana begalosenu. Rav Kook says, and many commentaries on Haggadah pick up on this same theme, which is that for Jews throughout the ages, the Pesach experience was a difficult one. Why? Because what are we supposed to do on Pesach? We're supposed to go ahead and relive it. We're supposed to go ahead and feel like we're free. We're supposed to feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's as if Chayv Adol Niro says Atzmo, as if I have gone free, as if I've been emancipated, I've experienced salvation. What's the problem? For the Jew throughout the ages, the Jew was not free. The Jew was persecuted. In fact, we know historically, Pesach was the time of some of the worst persecutions, blood libels, pogroms. Remember, again, also compounded by the fact of the coinciding of Pesach and Easter, historically, Pesach was a time of terrible persecution. So if Cook says the Jew throughout the ages sat down at his Seder table and said, you know what, I have no idea how I'm supposed to pull this off. You want me to feel free. You want me to feel emancipated. You want me to feel like I just left Egypt, but yet life is exceptionally difficult. There's persecution, there's difficulty, there's bloodshed all around me. And look what he says. He says, V'natzi asher go ahan fila. V'ein anu mekaimim mitzas karban Pesach. V'gam ne'emar lama niskar ha'avdus. V'anachnu kayom hazeh gam kin avadim. So the Jew becomes despondent on the night of the Seder. I don't have the Paschal lamb. You want me to remember what it was like to be a slave? I don't have to remember what it was like to be a slave. Why? Because my current circumstances are very reflective of that. Uma nosis begalusinu mikodem va'ata nefchalanu asimchal yagon. And it's very nice that God redeemed us from Egypt, but how exactly does that help my circumstances now? He says, alze amar kehalach ma'anyo. Therefore, we say this is the bread of affliction. She'in lanu mizbeach lahakriv ha'pesach. It's true. We don't have an altar on which to offer up the Paschal lamb. V'halechem ani b'lo mitzas ha'aretz. And it's poor man's bread, and we don't have Eretz Yisrael. Ukimo zeh achlu avusin b'Eretz Yisrael. So let me tell you the rest of Rav Kook outside. Rav Kook essentially explains so beautifully that this paragraph, the add-on, was there to validate the despondency of the Jew. Yes. Halach ma'anya. You know what? I identify a lot with the Jews. You have to understand something, my friends. We live in such a different age. We live in such a different world. You know, for us, the notion of persecution is so dramatically different than what it was generations ago. You know, we go home, we have a Pesach Seder, and we don't have to be afraid about someone, you know, knocking down our door and dragging us out. We don't have to be afraid about certain Kishrach. We don't have to be, again, That's an incredible gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us, that even though we are in Golos, we are in diaspora, thank God we live in a country that allows for our religious beliefs, allows for us to practice freely. That is a gift. When you look at that in the historical continuum of the Jewish people, we've never had it before. We have never had it before in the diaspora like we have it now. So you have to take a step back into the Jew of yesteryear's mind and understand that when he sat down at the Pesach Seder, you know, it's not like today. Where, you know, again, what's our greatest challenge today with Pesach? Our greatest challenge? Right? The greatest challenge is that Pesach pizza tastes a little bit too much like matzah. Like Nebuch. You know, again, I can't believe, why can't they get it right? That's the big difficulty, right? That there's not the plethora of products that seven mile market runs out of products, you know, on the third day of Cholamayim, and they're not willing to restock. Nebuch. You know what's gonna happen? What's gonna happen to the last days? You have to understand that for the Jew of yesteryear, again, Pesach elicited feelings of despondence and desperation. You want me to feel free. You want me to celebrate emancipation from Egypt. What is that done for me? I am still in this, you know, in my uncle's family, they had a family holiday on the second day of Cholamayim Pesach. Why? Because my uncle's father on the second day of Pesach, or grandfather on the second day of Pesach, so he was seized by some of the local Gentile kids and thrown into a well. Miraculously, he survived. So they make a yontiv on the, you understand what that means to live in circumstances like that, where the Jew is not protected by the laws of the land, where the Jew is not a citizen, where the Jew... So a very nice Pesach is wonderful, but what exactly is the fact that we were liberated 3,500 years ago from Egypt do for me today? So says Rav Kook, the rabbis understood the despondency that Pesach evoked in the historical Jew, and the rabbis sought to proactively address it. We know that you can relate to this matzah, because the same way that our ancestors ate the matzah, this bread of affliction, we also eat the bread of affliction. But yet we go on. That's another statement of despondency. You know what? If I wanted to, I could invite last minute company. You know why? Because there's no Korban Pesach. Because there's no Beis HaMikdash. What do we have? But amazingly enough, what do we say? Hashata hacha l'shana haba ba'arad Yisrael. This year it's difficult. But just hold on. Because the same way that our forefathers despaired in Egypt after 210 years of slavery, and they thought it was over, they thought there was no hope, they thought there was no tomorrow, and yet God redeemed them. God provided them with incredible salvation. Says Rav Kook, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do the same for us. If there's one thing that our people have an incredible track record about, it's being able to emerge victorious even from the darkest and most dire of circumstances. So we know again tonight, you don't feel free. But once upon a time, we also didn't feel free in Egypt and God took us out. So too God will extricate and God will also ultimately redeem us from our present circumstances as well. So you have again in the Minchas Asher and Rav Kook an amazing first approach. According to the Minchas Asher, really this whole paragraph is what we call Zecher l'Churban. Whenever we have a simchadik, whenever we have a joyous event in life, we are always obligated to remember that which we have lost. And therefore, says the Minchas Asher, we use the same verbiage that our ancestors used during the time of the temple to invite people to join them for their Korban Pesach. We use that same verbiage to do what? To remember that which we do not have. So we discharge our obligation to remember the destruction of the temple with Halach Ma'anya. Rav Kook takes it a step further and a little bit makes it a little bit more personal. That what is Halach Ma'anya really about? It's to address the historical desperation of the Jew. We know you feel you're also eating the bread of affliction. We know that life is tough. There's no Korban Pesach. There's no Beis HaMikdash. Hold on. Just hold on. Once upon a time, we were in dire circumstances as well, and God extricated us from them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will extricate us from our personal and national difficulties as well. Take a look at number 4. Rav Soloveitchik takes a different approach. And again, you should take a look at Rav Kook inside, because the truth is there's a lot more than what I told you, but gets a little bit more in depth. So Rav Soloveitchik, and this, I've quoted this idea from Rav Soloveitchik before in the past. So the Rav writes, again, everybody's bothered by the same basic question. Yesh la'ayin, lama maschilim es ha'agada b'halach ma'anya, ha'osekes b'achnas as orchim, v'zev v'adai d'mitzas ha'achnas as orchim mitzvah gedolehi, avalich ora, ein lo'inyan la'agada. So the Rav asks the question a little bit differently. What the Rav is bothered by is, you know, there are so many mitzvos that apply the night of the Seder. Why are we bringing up Hachnasas Archim? Right? Why speak about inviting guests? What does that have to do? You see, the Rav leaves aside what kind of invitation is this. That's not really his primary. What the Rav is bothered by is why the focus on having guests? Why the focus on Hachnas? Like, stop everything. We're in the middle of the Seder, or we're into the Seder already. We already have made Kiddush, Karpas, Yachas, everything. Stop, hold everything, let's invite guests. Why does Hachnasas Archim play a central role in the Seder night? And the Rav gives an amazing answer. V'ayin betanis, again, this I've quoted before, d'Rav Huna b'chol yom, k'avakarach richta, havi omer koman ditzarech leisei v'leichol, v'lo rak b'leil ha-Seder. See, quotes over here, we know that Hachnasas Archim is very important, because the Gemara says that Rav Huna, before he would sit down, he would always invite guests into his home. But why on the Leil HaSeder? Paragraph B. V'nira lomar, dehine ava eved, eno yochol hachnis archim. So the Rav points out something very interesting. That if there's one mitzvah that a servant cannot perform, it's what? It's having guests. Hachnasas archim, hospitality. Why? Dehakaim alon, mashikana eved, kana rabo. For the simple reason that in order to perform the mitzvah of hospitality, what do you need? You need possessions. You need the power of ownership, because it's only called money if I go over to your house and feed someone else your food. That's not hachnasas archim on my part, that's theft. So in order to be machnas archim, in order to be an hospitable person, I have to have possessions. And a servant does not have possessions. Why? Because whatever the servant owns automatically becomes the property of the master. The servant doesn't have property. The ein lo bayis, he doesn't have a home. And therefore, v'lochein maschilim es ha'agada b'achnasas archim. Therefore, says the Rav, we begin the Haggada with a statement of hospitality, achnasas archim. V'omrim, what do we say? Kol dichvin yesev yecho, whoever who's hungry, come and eat. Dizel derech eres, because this is a manifestation of our newfound freedom. Laharos she'ein anu avadim, we are no longer servants. Ella b'nei chorin, we are free. Shanu machnisim archim. So the Rav highlights something really amazing. What the Rav explains is that, is this a real invitation? No. For all the reasons we've said before. Number one, because I've already started the Seder. Number two, because I'm only speaking to the people that are already assembled at my table. So says the Rav, so what is this? The Rav explains that the ability to share with others represents a physical demonstration of freedom. That what I am saying is, if I wanted to have company, if I wanted to invite more people, I would be able to do so. Why? Why? Because I'm free. Because I'm free. Because I have possessions. Because I have things. Because I have a home. If I wanted to, I could. Am I actually doing it now?
No.
No, but the license to do so, the ability to do so, is in and of itself a physical demonstration of freedom. The fact that if I wanted to put another place setting on the table, if I wanted to go out into the street and pull someone off the street and invite them to my, that I could do that, is in and of itself a demonstration of my newfound freedom. So again, says the Rav, what we're trying to do over here is we're trying from the beginning to demonstrate our newfound freedom. And really what we're doing over here is from the beginning of the Seder, we are defining what freedom is really about. And we'll come back to that in just a moment. So according to the Rav, again, it's not a real invitation, but the whole idea is I'm demonstrating my newfound freedom to show I have possessions. I own things. And because of that, if I wanted to have guests, I could. To take this a little bit further, if you look at number 5, Rabbi Sachs has a beautiful commentary on the Haggadah. And here he writes the following. He says, this is the bread of affliction. He says, this is a strange invitation. This is the bread of affliction which our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. Let all that are hungry come and eat. What hospitality is it to offer the hungry the taste of suffering? See, he has something very interesting. He says, very nice. If somebody doesn't have, why don't you share in some of my bread of affliction? It doesn't sound very tempting. In fact, though, this is a profound insight into the nature of slavery and freedom. As noted above, matzah represents two things. It is the food of slaves and also the bread eaten by the Israelites as they left Egypt in liberty. What transforms the bread of affliction into the bread of freedom is, excuse me, what transforms the bread of affliction into the bread of freedom is the willingness to share it with others. Primo Levi was a survivor of Auschwitz. In his book, If This Is a Man, he describes his experiences there. According to Levi, the worst of all was when the Nazis left in January 1945, fearing the Russian advance. All prisoners who could walk were taken on brutal death marches. The only people left in the camp were those who were too ill to move. For 10 days, they were left alone with only scraps of food and fuel. Levi describes how he worked to light a fire and bring some warmth to his fellow prisoners, many of them dying. He then writes, when the broken window was repaired and the stove began to spread its heat, something seemed to relax in everyone. At that moment, Tarowski, a Franco-Pole 23 who had typhus, proposed to the others that each of them offer a slice of bread to us three who had been working. And so it was agreed. Only a day before, a similar event would have been inconceivable. The law of the lager means the camp, said, eat your own bread, and if you can, that of your neighbor, and left no room for gratitude. It really meant that the law of the lager was dead. It was the first human gesture that occurred among us. I believe that the moment can be dated as the beginning of the change by which we who had not died slowly change from prisoners to men again. Sharing food is the first act through which slaves become free human beings. One who fears tomorrow does not offer his bread to others, but one who is willing to divide his food with a stranger has already shown himself capable of fellowship and faith, the two things from which hope is born. That is why we begin the Seder by inviting others to join us. Bread shared is no longer the bread of affliction. Reaching out to others, giving help to the needy and companionship to those who are alone, we bring freedom into the world, and with freedom, God. Rabbi Sachs writes so beautifully, such an amazing idea. So again, is it a real invitation? Not really, for all the reasons we've said before, but rather explains Rabbi Sachs that the ability to offer to another, the ability to share with another, is an emotional demonstration of freedom. So what we have over here, if we combine the Rav and Rabbi Sachs, are really two sides of the same coin. According to the Rav, this idea of being willing to share with us, this idea of being of inviting others, although it's not a true and real invitation, is a physical manifestation or a physical demonstration of my newfound freedom. How so? Because the slave can't offer anything to anyone because he doesn't own anything. The willingness to offer, the willingness to share, I should say, the willingness to give to the other, says the Rav, is the first physical manifestation, physical demonstration of our newfound freedom. Rabbi Sachs says, it's not as much a physical demonstration of freedom as what? As an emotional demonstration of freedom. That the slave cannot share Because for the slave is focused on one thing, and that is self-preservation. The slave has to survive, and the slave must use all resources at his disposal, at his fingertips, in order to survive. If I share with you, then that handicaps my ability to survive. But the free man realizes that his survival, and life is not just about surviving, life is about thriving, requires the greater community, requires connection to the other. Therefore, says Rabbi Sacks, the first way we demonstrate our freedom is our willingness and our ability to share with the other. So according to the Rav, halach ma'anya, the outstretching, the symbolic outstretching of the hand is the physical demonstration of freedom. I'm now a free man, I own things, and therefore I could share. Rabbi Sacks, the outstretching of the hand, the ability to share with the other, represents the spiritual and emotional metamorphosis from slaves to free men, because only the free man has a willingness to give to the other. The slave hoards everything he has for himself for his own preservation. Take a look at a third approach, number six. And again, I'm just pointing out, none of these are mutually exclusive. They all work beautifully in concert together. So number six is from Rabbi Lau's commentary on the Haggadah. And here Rabbi Lau tells a beautiful story. He writes the following. Echad misedar lela Pesach, arachti b'chel ha'avir. So this was when Rabbi Lau was the chief rabbi of the state of Israel. So he writes that one year I spent, I spent the Pesach Seder with the Air Force. He conducted a communal Seder for the Air Force. Im lamala me'elef mishtatvin. If you can imagine, 1,000 participants. 1,000 participants. Karasi es Haggadah. That's Rabbi Lau writes, and I read the Haggadah. Halach ma'anya ba'aramis, v'tirgamti osa li'ivrit. So I read the halach ma'anya in Aramaic, and I translated it into Hebrew for the soldiers. V'hine kam tayas sa'ir. There was a young pilot who stood up and he said the following. Mevakish l'shol, she'ila, I have a question. Kavod harav, excuse me, Rabbi. Ani shamati es atargum shehalach ma'anya, mipicha. I heard you translate halach ma'anya. Nidme li she'avad hakalach al kol hanusach hazeh. So this young pilot said to Rabbi Lau, I think this is outdated. I don't think this applies to us at all. After all, tira hashata hacha, hashana po, the shana haba be'eretz Yisrael. Maze the shana haba be'eretz Yisrael. Anit sabar, kol hachayim sheli ani be'eretz Yisrael. So again, this young man said, what do you mean next year in Eretz Yisrael? I am in Eretz Yisrael. Not only that, I was born here. I spent my whole life in Israel. Hashata avdi, the shana haba b'nechor, this year we're slaves. Next year we'll be free. What are you talking about? Mapitom, hashata avdi. What do you mean this year we're slaves? Ani nolarti kvar b'toch ha-medina. I was born already in a free Jewish state. Ach pam lo hayisi achar me'asher ben chorin. I've always been free my entire life. Good question. A very good question. So this young Air Force pilot is asking Rabbi Lau, why are we saying this? Paragraph B. Hishafti la explained to him habit. And this is so beautiful. Ba'ozni shamati es mori v'rabi harav shach b'yeshiva Sponovich, es rabbi Eliyahu Lopian b'yeshiva b'zichron Yaakov, v'es rabbi Shlomo Zalman Arbach b'yeshivas kol Torah. So I saw many great people throughout the ages, writes Rabbi Lau. And what happens? Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. She says, I saw my great Rebbeim. And what happens? I saw them throughout the year. But I'm specifically on Yom Kippur. Yom Kodesh B'Yosef Shal HaShana. I had the privilege to spend Yom Kippur with each of these great people. Kishebevadai tzarech lomar, emes, v'rak esa emes. Now on Yom Kippur, you know, even if a person has difficulty always telling the truth, it's a good idea to tell the truth on Yom Kippur. Okay. Davar sheheim hikpidu alav klemos. Now these great men, they tried to tell the truth every day of the year, certainly Yom Kippur. And what happened? V'ani shamati b'mo ozni, I heard with my own ears, osam omdim umakim alchit, v'omrim rishima shel arboim, v'arbo chatoim no roim, ha'echad yoser me'asheni. And I heard these great men clap alchit, right? 44 alchits, one worse than the next, right? We say confession on Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur we confess every single type of sin possibly imaginable. And what happened? One worse than the next. Alchit shechatan lefanecha baze ubaze ubaze. Kimo shemafiyim machshu shemikipur lufisayde kapo shal aleph base. I heard these great rabbis go through the entire vidui. כשאתה מסתכל על זה באופן אובייקטיבי, when you look at this in an objective idea, objective framework, אתה משתן, איך הם יכולים לומר דברים כאלה? חלקן עבירו שלם נמר ירג ויעבור, הלו כולנו יודעים שהם לא עברו את העבירו שאלו. So רב אלה asked for himself a very interesting question. I always wondered when I heard Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Shach, Rav Elio Lapian, and they clap all of these al-chait. I say, what are they doing? Right? The truth is, most of us, thank God, don't violate most of that list, hopefully. Right? Certainly, again, these great rabbis, they weren't violating the stuff on this list, and yet they're saying it with such kavana. He says, and began to think to myself, Bedoros Kodmim, it's not just them. It's not just Rav Shach, Rav Elio, Rav Shlomo Zalman. He says, in previous generations, Amad Baal Shem Tov, V'amad Agon Mivilna, עמדו כל גדולי הדור שלנו, אחיד שחתנו לפניך, וכי הוציאו מפיהם חלילה דבר שלו אמס. And Rav Lau said, you know, I began to think to myself, it's not just these rabbis, all the rabbis of previous generations, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, the Vilna Gaon, they also said all of these al-chaits. And yet I know, they didn't violate all of these averos. So how could they say, אחיד שחתנו לפניך, for this sin that I committed, when they did not commit those particular transgressions? And Rav Lau said something so amazing, paragraph C. התשובה היא, הם לא חשבו רק על עצמם. The answer, says Rabbi Lau, is because when these great men said vidui, they were not only thinking of themselves. לא כל הזמן אני ואני ואני. Life is not only about me, me, me. צריך לחשוב על הזולת. We have to think about the other. צריך לחשוב על כלל ישראל. We have to think about the collective. כי כל ישראל ערבים זה בזה. We are all responsible for one another. כאשר הצדיקים הללו ביקשו סלח לנו, מחה לנו, כפר לנו. When these great men throughout the generations asked, forgive us, atone for us, על חיד שחתנו לפניך, הם חשבו על הכלל, הם לא חשבו על עצמם. Says Rabbi Lau, when the great men of previous generations clapped in על חיד for all these averos, true they didn't do it, but what did they know? What did they know? They knew that others did. They know that members of Klal Yisrael did violate these averos. And so when they clapped, when they hit their chests in a penitent fashion, they weren't doing it for themselves, they were doing it for the collective. Paragraph D. Kach hadavar himshachti v'amarti b'nusach hazeh shal ha'agada. So says Rabbi Lau, and he turned back to the Air Force officer, and he said, this is the answer. Ani tzarech tamid lachshov al atzmi. Do you think that life is only about thinking about me? Ani tzavar. Ani nolarati b'toch ha'medina. That's what you're supposed to do. I'm a Sabra. I was born inside the state of Israel. So I'm a Ben Chor, nothing to worry about. So this is a little bit dated. He says, and what about my brothers and sisters who are behind the Iron Curtain? He writes over here, this is before ultimately the fall of the Iron Curtain. בארצות אסיה ואפריקה שהיו מאוד מאוד רוצים להשתחרר מעול שם ומן הגולה שם ולא בוהנה. What about the Jews throughout the diaspora? So many of which are kept in oppressive circumstances that want to come to Israel but can't. הם לא יכולים לומר זאת כי אין להם ליל סדר. They don't have the ability to recite halach ma'anya. Why? Because they don't even have a seder. Ein lahem matzah sviyayin. They don't have wine. They don't have matzah. Ein lahem hagadah shal pesach. They don't have hagadah. Ein lahem afilu asayyadah. And many of them don't even have the knowledge to be able to do what has to be done. Bo, niyeh lahem lepeh. Let us be their mouthpiece. Nafsik lachshav kol hazman al atzmeinu. Let's stop thinking just about ourselves all the time. Naschil lachshav gam al hazulas. We have to begin to think about the other. V'nomar peh echad b'shem kulam. And let's see on behalf of everyone. Hashata avdi. Now we are slaves. Maybe my personal circumstances are such that I'm free. But I know that there are many among our people who are not. And I am their mouthpiece on this night of the Seder. This year we have servants among us. L'shana haba b'nei chor. Next year, Emirat Hashem will all be free. Hashata hacha. This year we are here. L'shana haba ba'aradi. So next year, we should be in Eretz Yisrael. This is so amazing. So what Rabbi Lau explains really is that the essence of Halach Ma'anya is the following. You know, the Halach Ma'anya represents the plight of the Jew in distress. It's not in Hebrew. It's not in the vernacular of Eretz Yisrael. It's in Aramaic because there are Jews who, for whatever reason, either because personal circumstances, national circumstances, geographic circumstances, spiritual circumstances, emotional circumstances, are confined by a whole host of different circumstances, a whole number that handicap them. Says Rabbi Lau, the way we begin the Pesach Seder is by realizing this is not about me, it's about us. And if it's about us, if it's about becoming part of a collective, if it's about being, you know, Pesach is about the birth of the Jewish nation. You know what it means to be part of a nation? It means that you transcend yourself and you connect to the collective. And says Rabbi Lau, that's what we do at the beginning of the Seder. My life might be fine. My life might be great. All the pieces might be in perfect alignment. And Baruch Hashem, I have nothing to complain about. Great for you. But you know what? There are many people who have many difficult circumstances. And so as we begin the Seder, says Rabbi Lau, we give voice to the difficulties of our brothers and sisters. And we recognize that to be a free man, to be a free man, to be a free woman, to be a free nation, means to ultimately feel the plight of the other. If you look at number 7, this is from a wonderful Agada called Otsam Mefarshi Agada, which is just the compilation of various commentaries. And here he makes such a beautiful statement. U'bahagada shal Pesach, Hagon Rav Yosef Shalom al Yashiv, Zechat Levrach. So Rav Yashiv's Haggadah. I guess this means Rav Yashiv had notes in his Haggadah. Sirot Vayin Kasav, She'ein Ha'amira Mufnis La'aniyim. This idea of ultimately, whoever is hungry, come and eat. Whoever needs, come and join me, is not just for the poor. El Chelek mi mitzvah sviganata lebincha. Part of the mitzvah of telling over the Exodus narrative to one's children or to others assembled at the table, Lohodia Shemahus HaPesach Huadaga Sheyihye L'chol Adam Deit Sarko. You know what the essence of Pesach is? The essence of the Agada, the essence of Yitzias Mitzrayim, is to make sure that everyone has what they need. So says Rav Yashav so beautifully, that when I make that statement called Ditzrich Yesev Yivsach, whoever needs to eat, come and join me. Whoever's hungry, come and join me. What I'm saying is, I care about the circumstances of the other. Too often we live very insular lives, where all we are focused on, as I say, in our dalaramas, we live in our box, and I assume that because everything is okay in my box, everything is okay in your box, and everything is okay in everyone's box. So we have to come out of our box, and we have to realize that many people have difficult lives, many people have difficult circumstances, and I have to at least begin to acknowledge the fact that there are others within our midst, ultimately, who are suffering, others within our midst who are compromised, and I have to figure out what my role is in addressing the challenges and difficulties of the other. So Rav Yashav just takes us a step further. And Rav Yashav said, this is not like an add-on. This is part of the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzirah. You know, it's amazing. The mitzvah of Sipur Yetzirah, of telling over the Exodus narrative, is the mitzvah of V'higanata L'bincha V'yom Ha'leimor. You have to tell over your children the story of the Exodus. Rav Yashav suggests that part of telling your children the story of the Exodus is sensitizing your children to the circumstances of others. You want to raise good Jewish men and women, sensitize your children to never be indifferent to the suffering of others. And I say it applies, it's not just Jews, it's Jews and non-Jews alike. Condition your children to live life with an open eye to the challenges that others out there face. That's how you build a nation. Look at number 8. So what's interesting is we can take this a little bit further, because it's not just enough to remember. So again, remember, so far we have Rabbi Lau. Rabbi Lau is really focusing on that last phrase of Hashata Avdi L'shana Haba B'nei Chor. This year we're servants, next year we'll be free. Hashata Hacha, this year we're here L'shana Haba B'ar Di Yisrael. And Rabbi Lau explains that really, even if you're in Eretz Yisrael, if you have that privilege, you live in Eretz Yisrael, you're born in Eretz Yisrael, you've always been, you're free, everything in your life is perfect. I have to be the mouthpiece for the difficulties of the collective. Rav Yashav, part of the Pesach experience is being sensitive to the needs of others. But let's take it one step further. Look at number 8. This is from the Sefer Mipnine Harav. So Mipnine Harav is a Sefer written by Rav Herschel Schechter, one of the Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva Rosh called Yeshiva University. And he writes some of the Rav's Torah. And here he says something that is so beautiful. Kol Dichvin, Hashata Hach L'Shana Abba, Hashata Abdi, Nir Levaro, Al pi amishta bab mitzia, reish perak asocha sapolim. So he quotes the Gemara bab mitzia. What does the Gemara say? Ma'a aseh b'Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya, sha'amar libno, tse sechor lanapolim. So it's a story. that Rabbi Yochanan ben Matthia said to his son, go and hire some workers. Okay. Halach upasek lemezonos. So what would happen often is when you would hire day laborers, included, not only would you pay them a wage, but you would also agree to give them meals. Okay? So the son goes out, hires the workers, agrees to give them meals. Kishaba itzel aviv, amr lo. So now he comes back, he tells his father what he did. He says, so now Rabbi Yochanan says to his son, Bini, afilu im ata oselahem kisuda shlomo b'shaito, lo yotza yidei chavas chiman. So Rabbi Yochanan tells his son, you know, now you're in trouble. Because even if you give them a Solomonic feast, you will have not discharged your obligation. You will not have discharged your obligation to feed them. Why? Shehem b'nei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. Because those workers, those Jewish workers, they're the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They're royalty. They're spectacular. And they deserve every delicacy under the sun. And even if you were to give them a feast fit for a king, you still would not give them everything they're entitled to. Ella, actually, yaschilu b'melacha, but rather, Rabbi Yochanan told his son before they start working, seva amr lahem amenas she'ein lachem alai ella pas v'kitnes bilva. This is interesting. So Rabbi Yochanan tells his son, you have to go back out, and before they start working, you have to negotiate specific terms. What are the specific terms? That you agree to give them bread and lentils. Meaning, so if they accept those terms and they come back to work, then the agreement is an agreement. But absent any type of explicit agreement for what kind of food you have to provide for them, even if you gave them a Solomonic feast, you would not be discharging your obligation to them. So what do we see from here? So the Rav explains, V'halchinami nir levar hafa. So Rav Soloveitchik explains this would appear to be the same thing here. Shanachnu mazminim la'achirim, she'avo v'yisadu etzlenu. Remember, what are we doing in Halach Manu? We're issuing an invitation. Come, eat whoever wants to come. Now, any guests that we have from among the Jewish people, they're all going to be children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And if I'm going to have Jewish guests, then I'm really obligated to what? To give them a Solomonic feast. So the Rav says so beautifully. So what do we say in this paragraph? Please, everyone join us. And then when I issued that invitation, I realized, my gosh, I'm about to have the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov here, and I'm woefully underprepared for such magnificent and special guests. So what do I do in the next line? I qualify the invitation. Just to be clear, Hashata Hacha, Leshata Avdi, this year I'm compromised, I'm just a servant. Maybe next year will be a little bit better. Hashata Hacha, this year I'm here, maybe next year I'll be in Eretz Yisrael, so I can give you your full due. So what's happening over here? What the Rav is saying is something so profound, building what we just said before, that it's not just enough to worry about the needs of the individual. It's not just enough to go ahead and simply say, oh, I recognize that there are those who are suffering. I recognize that there are those who are having a difficult time. But rather, the job of the Jew is to go above and beyond for the other. The job of the Jew is to not just get by doing what I have to do for chesed, doing what I have to do for tzedakah, doing what I have to do to be there for the other. I have to go above and beyond. Why? Because when I help another Jew, who am I helping? I'm helping royalty. I'm helping the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Again, I might not be able to give you Suda Shlomo HaMelech. I might not be able to give you a Solomonic feast. But at least I know that when I reach out that hand to help, it's not just enough to do what I need to do to discharge an obligation. I really have to go above and beyond in helping the other. And one last piece, then we'll tie this all together. So in the Nesiv Bina, he writes so beautifully, such a fascinating idea. He says, Hazman al arachim halach ma'anya, mitoch nuscha shal hazman baror, shehi miskavenes lizman, shebo lo hekrivu od karen Pesach. Now, interestingly enough, as we said before, we clearly know that this invitation, whenever this was codified, this was already post-temple. How do we know that? Because we said before, ki yadua, ki ein Pesach ne'achal el l'minuyav, hayu le'elush sheno adu mirosh l'su'uda mishutepes. Because you know that the only people who could partake of a Karan Pesach are who? Are people who were included at the Chabura, part of the group at the time of the slaughtering. So rather, what do we say? U'mishum kach anu mosifin That's why we added this qualifier. That's why we're not talking about time of the temple. Right, this year we're servants. Next year we'll be free. This year he'll. Next year we'll be in Eretz Yisrael. V'hine, paragraph B. V'hine, madua dafka b'chag yesh tzorech ba'azmanam yuchedes la'aniyim. So why is it dafka on Pesach that we're going out of our way to invite the poor? Look what he says. Azem meshiv Abu Draham b'leil Pesach yesh hotza'a gidola. Because if there's one thing we all know, it's what? Pesach is very expensive. Pesach, apparently, certain things do not change throughout the generations. Pesach is very expensive. Ve'ein b'yat ha'aniyim liknos de sipukam. And for many of the poor, they simply don't have enough to be able to buy everything they need. Alkin nahaglomar. Therefore, again, the custom developed that on Pesach night, what do? We make a real, and according to this approach, this is a real invitation. Whoever's hungry, whoever doesn't have enough money to be able to make a Pesach, come and join us. Come and join us. Listen to this. Now, says the Abu Jonah, this is so movingly beautiful. The difficulty is, you know, here, I'm extending this invitation to the poor. So let's say this pauper takes me up on my invitation. And what happens? How is this pauper going to feel? At the end of the day, this is the night we're supposed to celebrate our freedom. This is the night we're supposed to feel like aristocracy. We're supposed to feel special. And what happens? This person doesn't have enough. See, the Abu Jam says, you know what we do in the very next line, and this is so beautiful. It's not just enough to invite the poor into my house. It's not just enough to be there for the other. I have to speak to their heart. And what do I say? Don't be embarrassed. Don't be embarrassed that you have to be dependent on others this year. Hashana hazos atem kan. This year, this is your circumstance. L'shana haba tihiyu l'shalom b'Eretz Yisrael. Next year, things will be better. Says the Abu Draham, it's not just enough to worry for the other. It's not even just enough to go ahead and be there for the other. But rather, what do you have to do? You have to build up another individual who's in a difficult time. You have to speak to their heart. You have to give them chizuk. You have to give them words of inspiration. You have to give them words of confidence, words of motivation. You have to infuse them with a sense of hope and a sense of optimism. And says the Abu Draham, that's the meaning of those last phrases. L'shashata avdi. This year I know, see, according to the Abu Draham, we're not talking to ourselves. We're talking to the Ani who just came in. This year I know your circumstances are very hard. This year you feel like a slave. You know what? L'shana haba b'nei chorin. Things could change and life will change. Look historically, we were slaves for 210 years and we thought we were never going to get out of it and we did. I know you think that your circumstances are a dead end and life will never get better. Life will get better. Hashata hacha, this year we're here, we're in Galus, we're in diaspora and things are difficult. L'shana haba b'ardi Yisrael. So says the Abu Draham, after we open our homes, after we open our hearts, after we go above and beyond, the job of the Jew when reaching out is to infuse the other with hope. And not just the hope of a pat on the back, don't worry, it'll be okay. Real meaningful words. Your life will change. Your circumstances will get better. And again, you know, amazingly enough, what don't we do? We don't tell the person that things will get better when? Tomorrow or today. Next year. Next year, because you know what? Life doesn't always change on a dime. Sometimes it takes circumstances, a little bit of time to be able to evolve, to be able to develop. But just hang on and you'll see that things will be okay. So if you bring this all together, what comes out from, again, and this is only the opening, this is the problem with the Seder, right? Is that everybody has the good Divrei Torah on the first part. So right, Halach Maya takes about 45 minutes. And then again, people are like, oh my gosh, it's 10 o'clock. We're starting. Okay, see, when I'm sharing with you, just you should know Halach Ma'anya, as we're going to see now, as you piece everything together, is that these are not just lessons for Halach Ma'anya. These are lessons for the Leil HaSeder. These are lessons ultimately, again, for the entire Pesach experience. So to bring this all together, so we had essentially three different approaches in understanding Halach Ma'anya. Again, just to review, our first approach was the Minchas Asher, Rav Weiss, and Rav Kook. That what are we doing at the beginning of the Seder? Zecher LeKhorban. We are remembering that which has been lost. We remember the fact by using the same verbiage that our ancestors used when the temple stood to invite people to join them in their Paschal celebration, the Paschal Lamb. We use that same verbiage, but instead of uttering it as a real invitation, we are uttering it almost, you hear the loss, you hear the feelings of pain, you hear the pain in our voice as we say the very words that our ancestors said. We don't say it as an invitation, rather we would say it as a remembrance to that which has been lost. But amazingly enough, we end with optimism. Yes, we remember that which has been lost, but how do we end it? Hashata hacha, l'shana abar b'ardi Yisrael. Hashata abdi, l'shana abar, as Rav Kook says, we don't end just, what's been lost. We say, yes, we recognize what's been lost. But the same way that we celebrate on this night that we were in dire circumstances and God extricated us from those circumstances, provides us with salvation, we believe that that is going to happen again. And this, says Rav Kook, this, says Rav Weiss, is the theme of the Seder. That no matter how difficult life is, you know what the power of the Pesach experience is? What's the real, if you get to the kishkas of the Pesach Seder, what is it all about? It's about that life will get better. That's the message of Pesach. That Pesach was about 210 years of difficulty and certainty. People gave up hope. People threw in the towel. People thought they were down and out for the count. And yet what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu stepped in. God stepped in. We stepped up and we had salvation. What an incredible metaphor for life. There are times as individuals, there are times as a people that we feel down and out. We feel at a dead end. We feel that there is no hope. And Pesach inspires us to remember, Hashata Avdi, L'shana haba b'nei chorin. Hashata hacha, L'shana haba b'aradi Yisrael. A second approach. We saw again, Rav Soloveitchik and Rabbi Sachs, who explain that this invitation, really what they're giving is the definition of freedom. So the Rav Soloveitchik explains that this issuing of the invitation, which is only a quasi-invitation, is a behavioral demonstration of my newfound freedom. I am now a free man. I have possessions. And therefore, if I wanted to, I could what? I could invite company. Rabbi Sachs, it's not as much a physical manifestation or behavioral manifestation, but rather what? An emotional metamorphosis. As a slave, I hoard. As a slave, I keep everything for myself. Self-preservation. As a free man, I can connect to the other. What's the common denominator? You know what the real essence of freedom is? The real essence of freedom is not the ability to do whatever you want. Because if that's the case, we're not free. You know, the Gemara says, in reality, when we left Egypt, what did we do? We really swapped one master for another. Right? We got rid of Pharaoh and we accepted God. Freedom is not the ability to do whatever you want. Freedom is the ability to do something meaningful. And specifically, to do something meaningful for the other. According to the Rav, the first real demonstration of freedom that I engage in on the night is I invite guests. It's not a real invitation. It's a contrived invitation, right? It's not real, but it's okay. I'm flexing my newfound freedom muscles. And how do I flex my freedom muscles? You know, not by coloring on the wall or by going in and breaking a window or by taking little simple things that people know. How do I demonstrate my freedom? I could give you, I could invite you, I could bring you into my life because now I have things that I could share with you. Says Rabbi Sachs, how do I demonstrate my freedom? I can share. The greatest manifestation of Jewish freedom is the ability to be there and connect with the other. To take this one step further, really we could merge two and three. Approach two and three. Rabbi Lau explains that here it might be that our personal circumstances are just fine. My personal life is fine. I'm a tzabar, I'm the sabra. Everything is good. But says Rabbi Lau, on Pesach night, we recognize that freedom also means that you don't just live for yourself. It's not ani, ani, ani. It's not I, me, me, me. But rather, as part of freedom is, I live as part of the collective. I live as part of the nation. And therefore, if part of the nation is in a state of disrepair, I feel that pain. I feel that angst. I feel that disrepair. If your Pesach is not perfect, then my Pesach is not perfect. If your life has pain, then I shoulder that pain as well. That's what we say at the end. Hashata Avdi. I might not be a slave, but some of us are slaves. Slaves to circumstances, slaves to situations, slaves to life. In whatever way, I feel your servitude. I might be an Eretz Yisrael, but if there are Jews who are not, I feel your feelings of exclusion and diaspora. As Rav Yashiv said, this is part of the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, but it's not just enough to feel the pain. Rav Soloveitchik explained, what do you have to do? You have to go above and beyond for the other. It's not just enough. We're all B'nai Malachim. So it's not just enough to get by and give you just a little bit. I have to treat you like the royalty that you are. And to take it a step further, it's not just enough to be there. It's not just enough to go above and beyond. But if you see another in a state of disrepair, you see another having difficulty in life, give them the words of encouragement. You know what the best thing about words of encouragement are? They're free and they're in constant supply. Go over. You put your arm around someone. You give them a smile. You say, "Look, I don't have the answers to your circumstances, but I think about you. I care about you. And I really hope that one day your circumstances turn around." You know, the chizuk, the incredible strength that you could give another who's having a difficult time just simply because you tell them that you care. So if you bring this all together in this one little paragraph, we have so many profound messages of freedom. Freedom doesn't happen immediately. Freedom is a process. And even if you're not free now, don't despair that it's never going to come. Hold on to your hope. Hold on to your optimism, because hopefully one day it'll come. Freedom doesn't mean the ability to do whatever you want. Freedom means the ability to do something impactful specifically for the other. Freedom means to transcend myself. Recognize that I am part of the collective. Freedom means the ability to go beyond, to be able to be there for the other. And freedom means the ability to put my arm around the other, to console the other during times of difficulty. So we can understand why Chazal chose to place this little paragraph, which is so out of place, in its Aramaic, which was the vernacular of the common man. Because it's from this little paragraph, from this little piece, right before the Maggid section, that truly sets the spiritual table for our Seder experience. All right, we'll stop over here. Again, just a reminder, Shir next week is on Monday night at 8 o'clock.
Thank you very much. So what about the Seder plate? Doesn't that remind us of the Korban, Pesach?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We have a number of reminders. We have a number.
Right, so why would we even need this paragraph?
Well, because I think that there's a difference between a reminder for ultimate use versus a reminder that you say. I think it's always more profound for a person to actually have to articulate.
Thank you.